The next talk by Benjamin Leather from the University College Dublin, who will be talking about calculating second order self force for a Tucholsky formalism. Please.
Thanks, Peter. Must apologize in advance for my voice. I didn't plan to sound so croaky for today, but here we are. So let's consider the current state of the second order calculation. So we've begun to see how we're attaining promising results through the current implementation of second order, of the second order calculation of Lorentz gauge. So the work of Niels Warburton, Adam Pound, Barry Wardell, Leon Durkin, and Jeremy Miller has now yielded results for the gravitational wave flux for compact binaries through second order in the mass ratio. So this original group, as now been alluded to, is now expanded, and now we have multiple pathways to, hopefully, a physically relevant scenario of a generic orbit in Kerr spacetime. So one such route is a second order calculation through Tucholsky formalism. For now, it remains the case that we're considering a quasi-circular orbit in Schwarzschild spacetime, albeit in a new Tucholsky format. So the outline of which is shown here, as you've seen previously. And today's talk is going to focus on how we implement this calculation once you have all the necessary components. So primarily a well-defined second order Tucholsky source. So once you have all the necessary pieces, what would a calculation of the second order field look like? So we begin to recognize this since now we, at least to the best of our knowledge currently, know what our former second order field equation in the frequency domain will take. And we have the benefit of hindsight from the current Lorentz gauge formalism of the quasi-circular orbits. So we're going to require a code that can calculate the second order field, specifically the second order Weyl scalar, for the Tucholsky source. Such a source will be extended throughout space-time as it will be derived from the first order metric perturbation in Lorentz gauge, as well as containing distributional pieces that need to be accounted for. We need to be able to adopt hyperbola order slicing towards the horizon and infinity. This is necessary to solve our Tucholsky equation, as it shall become clear in a moment, but it's also proven highly effective in the Lorentz gauge second order calculation. The behavior of the source and the integrals also dictate that we need to allow for punctures in certain regions in order to quell divergences, and hence we require a Weyl tube puncture scheme. So this is another aspect that's relevant in the current calculation. So why is hyperbola order slicing particularly practical for solving the Tucholsky equation in the frequency domain? Well, the potential is long-ranged, as many of you will know, and hence the numerical error will grow uncontrollably with R. So accurate solutions will become exceedingly difficult to attain. So here, we will consider an approach based on the geometric framework devised by Senghenoglu, where we typically solve our equations on the time hypersurfaces that extend between the bifurcation sphere and spatial infinity. So this is the T slicing that's on the right-hand side here. And Senghenoglu proposed that one uses hyperbola order slicing where the time surfaces now extend between future event horizon and future null infinity. So this translates to finding a new time coordinate we label W in terms of a height function K. This is so it's not to confuse us with the usual labeling for the metric perturbation, for which surfaces of constant W foliate the space-time with horizon penetrative between hyperbola order slices. So there are many choices one could make for the height function, but we choose one such that W sharply transitions from the null row V at future horizon to T in a region containing the particle, and then to U at future null infinity. So this means we must essentially solve three different field equations with three different time slicings in three different regions. So as a brief advertisement, I should point out that I implemented this in the Tucholsky package on the black hole perturbation toolkit as a numerical integration option. And what we do is we switch to our newly defined time transformation and rescale the radial Tucholsky solution so as to ensure our potential becomes short range. So the modified homogeneous version of the Tucholsky equation, the Bardeen-Prest-Tucholsky equation with hyperboloidal foliation is found to be the following. We should define the height function to be defined totally in terms of the tortoise coordinate R star and H, its derivative, which is known as the boost function, and must satisfy the following relations that we list here. So the modified potential is now short ranged as the asymptotic nature of the boost function means that the potential falls off as F near the horizon and R to the minus two near infinity. So also to note, there's just some notational economy, we'll drop the indices labeling the usual spherical harmonic modes and label our solution in different slicings in the following manner. So let's consider our Weyl tube scheme. we're going to actually split our domain into five different regions, which are illustrated here. The particle is going to be R equals R naught, and we assume there'll be a puncture at the horizon and infinity, but we could easily allow for a puncture in the particle region if it's required. So the different slicings are signified by the three alternate colors, and these transition sharply at the specified boundary. These are R minus and R plus. So we allow the Bardeen Prestakowski operator, labeled Fox for imaginative reasons, to be different in the different regions as it will be when we use different slicings. So in each region, we're going to define the field variable here that's tilde psi s, where the domain is gamma s. We will ultimately obtain the solutions in all regions by imposing suitable junction conditions at the region boundaries, but more on that shortly. So the homogeneous and retarded solutions will be rated at the boundaries by the following transformations, and this will be the case, the transformations between the different slicings. A scheme of this type was originally formulated by Adam Pound and Jeremy Miller in Lorentz gauge in general for frequency domain methods that will be outlined in the subsequent publication. The T's here are explicitly responsible for transforming between the different slicings, as we've shown. And the general solution in each region is given by the following, where RS is the left boundary to the domain, gamma S of the solution. And it's just the following standard variation parameters approach. We've added constant terms that are fixed by imposing junction and boundary conditions. So we have an appropriate scheme. But in lieu of a full second order full source term, or at least the data from 0.1 from Andrew, how are we going to test its validity? Well, short of waiting for a second order source term, we consider an alternative calculation to check the way the code is actually working correctly. So we can consider the slow time derivative of the Tucholsky solution. Strictly speaking, we should only consider the R0 derivative, but this is something we can use to test our code. So it's possible to find the R0 derivative from taking numerical derivatives using the black hole perturbation toolkit, if you so desire, based on the data collated over a range of R0 values, but one can do this far more efficiently by actually deriving a field equation for it. So if we consider our original field equation, by left quite general, but now specifically for the first order Tucholsky source and taking an R0 derivative of both sides, we derive a field equation for the R0 derivative, delta R0 tilde psi, that has exactly the same form as before, just with a different source term. And this source term will have distributional pieces, but now will always be non-compact due to the second term that's highlighted here, because it's going to be sourced by the retarded field. Hence, in general, this retarded integral may not even yield the correct solution, or even indeed converge for that matter. Therefore, it provides us with pretty good test bed for a subsequent second order calculation. So we can reformulate the calculation in precisely the same way we did before. We have equations in each region, gamma S, and the general solution in each region is going to be the same as before, with the replacement of effective source terms with our new ones, and the new constants B, thank you, Peter, found in a similar way to A. So the junction conditions are slightly more tricky to derive than before, since we must take a parametric derivative of the transformations in order to ensure the field and its derivative are going to be regular at the boundaries. So an example which is shown briefly here, and these such conditions and boundary conditions are enough to yield enough information to fix these constants. So let's consider the non-compact source term, or non-compact piece rather. We see this piece actually diverges at f to minus one towards the horizon, but converges towards infinity. However, this is not good enough to consider, because one must consider the real possibility that the asymptotic nature of the homogeneous solutions means that the retarded integrals themselves we saw in the general solution may not even converge. And so to assess the need for punctures, we must in fact analyze the integrands present. So that's what we do here. And we observe that, in fact, the integrands do possess a power law divergence of R squared towards infinity, and such scaling suggests the need for punctures towards infinity. We've confirmed numerically these integrals don't converge, further verifying the need for such punctures. So I'm not going to go into too much detail here in the interest of time, but we can obtain punctures in a practical way by considering the large R expansions used in finding retarded boundary conditions for the homogeneous solutions. So one can suitably scale this expansion, truncated for some numerical efficiency, to obtain a puncture in this infinity region, which we do, and including this yields an integrand that falls off sufficiently to ensure your integrals do indeed converge. So the order which you truncate this expression determines the fall off you observe. So here we sort of fall off in both of our 96 with enough terms. So going quickly to the results, our ordinal derivative calculations passes most consistency checks we can think of, including the retarded field being continuous across the boundaries, T slicing everywhere, obtaining the non-compact part of the source by inserting our solution into the original field equation, etc. However, we still have some minor issues with the implementation. See a small 1% relative error with the value of the field obtained using numerical derivatives, and a similar error for the Arnott derivative of the first order gravitational wave flux towards infinity. So the difference between the two fields satisfies the homogeneous equation. So this is actually going to be indicative of some erroneous homogeneous term. And furthermore, we find the difference between the two fields is going to be discontinuous across the world line, which suggests our minor error resides in the contribution of the distribution of source term. Of course, it's going to change the actual second order calculation. We even don't take much too much effort to correct this. So to quickly conclude, firstly, we would like to resolve our small numerical error in the Arnott derivative calculation residing in the distributional terms, after which we want to explore how the error in the calculation scales with the grid resolution of our code. So systematics are now going to be important in considering second order calculations, especially when looking to compare and varying quantities with other methodologies, given post-Newtonian or numerical relativity, as we saw earlier. And secondly, we would like to begin to implement the second order calculation. So the distributional pieces can be readily derived from the second order stress energy tensor. Meanwhile, we've already seen some lovely updates from Andrew on how we've already calculated the extended second order Tucholsky source. And despite being in its infancy, we would like to run the source through our code and see what kind of result we get. Yes, it will probably be the wrong result, but it'd be interesting to see how it behaves and if we consider any changes to our methodology if we need to. And finally, we're just going to a note. One component that we're planning to use is the highly regular gauge. So we hope that around the world line, we can transform into this gauge. This will allow us to solve the second order Tucholsky equation using a point particle source instead of requiring the use of a punch scheme. So I'll leave this to Sam Upton, who's going to talk about this more in the next talk. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Benjamin. We have a few minutes for questions. Rodrigo?
Yes, hi. Nice to see this again. Yeah, but I still don't understand what's the difficulty coming from, why not compactifying? I mean, what's preventing you from compactifying infinities?
I feel like you were going to ask this one. We talked about this previously.
Yes.
In essence, I'd see no reason why, if you get a well-defined source term and you have your equation in a nice form, you can go and compactify. I think to do this properly, though, you would need to try this on something smaller. So I mean something smaller on something simpler, a simpler idea. So either first order Tucholsky or first order Reggie-Riemann. I know you tried to do something similar. So in answer to your question, I don't see a problem with that. I can tell you can't see a problem with it either. And I think it would be something very much worth exploring.
Yeah. No, I mean, this is what we've been kind of iterating from time to time, but yeah. Oh, yeah, let's
we do need to catch up on that.
See you. Thanks.
Any other questions? I have a quick question. So what order does one need to go in the near point expansion for the puncture, say from a representative world line for the body, to get a well-defined second order source? Right. I guess this is maybe dependent on gauge, but it's, for instance, in Lorentz gauge.
So I haven't worked on the Lorentz gauge, so I can't answer the Lorentz gauge question personally. It will depend on the gauge. It depends what gauge we end up being in. So this is probably pertaining away from me a little, in the sense that we're hoping to transform to the higher regular gauge, but I don't want to talk about that too much because Sam Upton is the expert there. So I think that's probably the more preferable to ask. I don't know if either him or Adam or anyone else wants to comment on this.
Okay, yeah, I can ask him at the end.